Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 6, season 10, back to our normal format at the top of the programme. On my left I say hello Jack Bennion.
Hello Tony Simpson.
And on my right I say hello Ryan Champion.
Hello Tony and Jack.
It's good to be back as a trio once again at the top of the programme, but I'm going to go left field, boys. I'm not going to start where we normally start. Oh, no siree. But I am going to start with Jack's publication. I am going to go to page 2, and I am going to raise the possibly the best moustache in motorsport. Jack Bennion?
Yeah, it's Chase Carey from Liberty Media, and it's a little bit Santa Claus with a bit of a curl on it. I like it.
Yeah,
it's good.
I do. I love it. So I'm going to pose the question, best moustaches in rallying. It's almost like Sportsman is Biscuits, this on Fighting Talk. I apologise, but I'm going to do it anyway. Jack Bennion, best moustaches in rallying?
I seem to remember Possum Bourne having quite a good moustache at one point, but Juha Kankkonen's probably the most obvious one, isn't it?
Okay, I'll go with that. Ryan Champion?
It's got to be one of my rallying heroes, and Tony Pond.
Okay, I'm going to go Callie Grundle.
Ah, left field.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a
very
bushy...
It's very Movember, this, Tony.
It is. Well, there you go, you see. And that was kind of where I was going. I was going to try and do Movember, but I am one of those people who can grow hair pretty much anywhere other than on his head and on his top lip. So if Movember was somewhere else, without going too dark here, I would have been fine. There you go.
Dear.
Yeah. I'm not going there. Anyway, boys, we're back. As I say, it's rallying. We've done moustaches already. Can't believe it. We're a minute and a half in. I want to start at the RAC, Jack Bennion. Obviously, we had Paul Lawrence on. You and I talked to him last week. I was following the event. Exciting. It had everything, didn't it, really? A proper four-day rally, proper epic battle. And it wasn't all about winners and losers, but, you know, the story, I guess, is what happened to Jason Pritchard, who pretty much led for 3 days of the rally.
Yeah, he was completely dominant over the course of the event, but, yeah, a half shaft broke on day 2, so he was out of the rally, unfortunately. But you've got to be in it to win it, as they say. And Marty McCormack, friend of the show, was the man who was there to take the win.
Although I know that wasn't Marty's normal escort either. I don't quite know the story behind that one, because his normal escort is in Australia at the moment. I know, because I sent it there. Yeah, so whether that was a new build or not, I don't know. I've not spoke to Marty for a couple of months. But right. I know you went up and you had a little look around. There was some... I was trying to roughly work out the cost of machinery and whether it was just as expensive, perhaps, is a GB paddock. And I mean is by that, let's take the obvious ones out of the GB paddock. There was some serious money and some serious kit there, wasn't there?
Yeah, some lovely cars. Marty's car was a brand new car, I think, for the rally. So that probably clears that one up. But yeah, there was some proper cars, some nice trucks as well. Too many Mark II Escorts. And I know some out there will probably lots of people will be shouting at me saying, how can you have too many Mark II Escorts? Definitely too many Mark to escort. So it was nice to see the odd Lancia Stratos, obviously, and TR78s and Chevettes and Cadets and all those kind of things, mixing it up a bit as well. The odd Porsche as well. But yeah, there's definitely room for some more competition in terms of manufacturers at the sharp end, I think.
Well, you and I were both quite excited, I think, because a good mate of mine, and somebody who's been on the show, of course, with Rally for Wales, he was out in the Mitsubishi Galant, done in the works colours. You and I both were very much pro that, but it seems a bit of a, Paul Lawrence alluded to it last week in the programme, it seems that historic rallying is not overly keen for period four-wheel drive cars to join them.
No, there's been a bit of a, well, I guess you're in two camps. If you want to run one, then you like it. And if you're into Mark IIs, then you don't. But obviously now the FIA have allowed pre-1991 cars into historics. So that's why we see the Belgian Historic Championship has seen the likes of the ProDrive Legacy this year, 4x4 Sierras, Sierra Cosworth Satis, Lancias. And as you said... Tom Coventry on the RAC rally was debuting a newly built Galant VR4, so built by Daryl Staniforth, who's well known for his work on Mitsubishis and Protons as well. And Daryl built that car new for the rally, and a lovely thing, unfortunately, succumbed to gearbox failure, I think.
Yeah. It was disappointing. But now we've gone, I'm going to bring Jack back a second because Jack's a little bit younger than us. Now we're at that point. Obviously, we all know what's hidden in your garage, although you called it a shed. I seem to remember on Twitter, I think the other week. Trust me, you haven't got a shed, my friend. I've got a shed. Now we're at that point. Well, could you be tempted, perhaps, Ryan? I know, obviously, you're doing. I know what you do with Tuttles and the Porsches and stuff like that. Could you perhaps be tempted into the British Forest in a period four wheel drive car?
Definitely yes. I mean, the thought of doing the RSC rally in a Legacy. Wow. I mean, I've been lucky enough to drive a Legacy a couple of times over the years, and a Pro Drive Legacy on a 38mm restrictor is a weapon. And you know, way faster than my Impreza on a 34mm restrictor. So yeah, to do that rally in something like that would be fantastic. But then so would the bill at the end of it. You're talking effectively World Rally Car money to run a proper ex World Championship car. So that's the issue, I guess, is cost again. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to do it in a 911. In all honesty, I would like to maybe think about that in the future. I think it'd be nice to try and get a 911 up there towards the sharp end. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack Bengen, where do you stand on this? Obviously, you're probably two generations ahead of Ryan and myself. Where do you stand on the whole four-wheel drive historic thing?
I like watching historics on the stages. And I think if you're following a championship and you go to every rally, then it's great. But for me, I'm a big fan of competition, and a top 10 being separated by 21 minutes is not something that gets me excited. So the machinery that is in the forests, you know, I couldn't agree more that listening to a BDG come from nowhere in the middle of a dark forest is absolutely spectacular. From an event point of view, doesn't get me as excited, because for me, the competition just isn't there. And the event was decided on attrition rather than any sort of actual competition between the top two, in my opinion. So, it might come across as a bit harsh than I mean it, because, you know, I love keeping tabs on the event, and people like Jimmy McRae and in the Forenza and things like that were great to sort of see. But from a competition point of view, it just doesn't really get me that excited, I'm afraid.
Now, when you put it like that with regards to times, but, you know, with regards to the attrition thing, I know it's the cliche, you know, to finish first, you've got to finish and everything else. So, you know, some of those guys, Jack, and again, I guess, you know, are going out because it's I suppose it's like the old Rally GB kind of adage. And, you know, I can speak kind of probably doing it a little bit as well, is that, you know, it is literally completing the rally is a victory for those guys, you know. And, you know, obviously you've got Jason Prichard and Marty McCormack and Roger Chilman was obviously the sharp end, Matthew Robinson, Steve Bannister. You know, those guys are very, very quick guys. And I guess once you start looking behind, it is people doing it for the experience as opposed to trying to win a rally. It's not such a bad thing.
Yeah, no, you know, I can argue with myself about this all day, and I can, you know, I don't need anyone else to argue with. I can argue with myself about what I think about the RSC.
So the rest of the hour long show is actually going to be Jack arguing with himself.
Hey, we can do well more than an hour on me arguing with myself about rally. That is not a problem at all. No, I agree. I mean, the taking part must be incredible. And, you know, to keep with the theme of arguing with myself, if you took a BRC round and threw that over 4 days, I'm sure you would get a similar sort of margin in the top 10 of 21 minutes. I guess the sort of format of going all around the country is, you know, is mega, and it's been done so many times. And, you know, everyone always says back in the old days it was so good. And, you know, that's something obviously that skipped my years a bit, and something that I wish I would have got to see in period. But in terms of the competition from afar, that's you know, the only sort of slight I would have is the fact that there was not really any sort of lead battle. And, you know, I got so excited about GB and things like that now, when they're, you know, I know it is a bit shorter, and a lot of the sort of diehard fans who like the longer event will go against me on that, but I do love to see a bit of competition and two people fighting it out, or more than two people, as has been the case in this year's WRC.
Right. Coming at it from the point of view of we're going to talk about, obviously, you're going to do East African Safari shortly. That event is a very, very similar thing, isn't it? You know, there is minutes and minutes and minutes separating the top 10. So, you know, again, that's another event that people go out to try and, I guess, you know, if you can't necessarily win it by being quick, if you're consistent and just keep the car going, then you can pick up results. Is that such a bad thing?
things here. I think, firstly, if you look at the RAC in period, you know, when you had the likes of Mikkola, Blomqvist, Toivonen winning it, they, you know, they were winning it by those amounts. I mean, Hannu Mikkola won it on a couple of occasions by like 10 minutes, I think, as did Stig Blomqvist, I seem to remember. So, yes, there was some close finishes. The, you know, the Toivonen year with Alain in the Delta S4s was pretty close. I think the Vatanen won it in a T16 was pretty close because he rolled it, but he had been 10 minutes ahead. So, you know, it wasn't unusual to see the event won by 5 or 10 minutes, but at the same time, there was close fights. And that's the same with the East African Safari. You know, it's actually the pace at the front is very, very quick. And yes, while some people will get a result through attrition, if you tend to be sort of 15, 20 minutes off the front, it's difficult to make back up again because there's normally somebody, even on the likes of Safari, has a clean run all the way through. It was actually four years ago, I think now, that Ian Duncan and Stig Blomqvist went into the last stage of Safari separated by less than a minute after 3,000 kilometres. And actually, it was a puncture that meant Stig lost the event, but he managed to win it last year. So, yeah, it's the nature of these long-distance events. I think whenever you're on over 300 stage miles, attrition will come into it, and occasionally you get a close battle to the end, but ultimately that's why the power stage was introduced on World Championship rallies now, wasn't it? We weren't always getting a fight to the end over 180, 200 stage miles, so they brought in regulations to ensure that, so you definitely aren't going to get that on all, you're not going to get that all the time on an even longer event.
There you go. Congratulations anyway to Marty. Moving on, Jack, we'll come back to MN and a bit of a headline. Meek leads the line for British hat-trick. A long time since this has happened, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see whether he can actually deliver something for Citroën. We've talked a lot about him this year, haven't we? And it's sort of mixed as to who thinks Citroën can actually sort of pull something out of the bag for Australia. But yeah, you know, McRae was the last person to do a hat-trick in 2001. I think, was it Argentina, Cyprus, and I've got MN in front of me so I can look it up now, and the Acropolis as well. So it'd be good to see if, you know, Chris can sort of add to Elvin's last win and make it a sort of a British hat-trick. Whether it'll be it's not going to be the same achievement as McRae winning all three on his own, but it would be nice to see, wouldn't it, from a British point of view?
Absolutely it would. Right, are we hopeful that Chris will be able to do this? Obviously, we spoke last week with regards to Rally GB for Chris. I think it was last week or maybe even the week before. But with regards to, you know, strong pace at the beginning, this is now a very, very different event. We don't know what Citroën have been doing in regards to testing and things like that. Are we expecting a little bit too much?
No, I don't think so. Not this time around. We've seen Chris win on dry gravel already. We can't really forget his win from earlier in the year in Mexico. So it's a drier gravel rally. He's got road position playing into his favour, and obviously they've improved the car as it's gone through the year. So I think if anything, it'd be surprising to see him not fighting at the front this time.
Yeah, there you go. Boys, obviously you went with me last week when we spoke to Dick Cormack from DMAC. Jack, you guys have run a pretty much a similar story to what Dick discussed with me last week. Are we surprised by this?
I don't know, really. It's in DMAC's always an interesting topic, isn't it, when you start looking into how the business works and things like that. So the fact that they're stepping back from the WRC a little bit doesn't surprise me. They've obviously got to, you know, establish the business is what Dick's kind of saying, is that they need to go back and establish what they're doing commercially. So to see them step back, I don't think is a huge surprise based on how many years they've been, you know, putting quite a bit of money into their WRC programs, and not just WRC top level either, WRC 2 and the JWRC or Drive DMAT Trophy as it was as well. So not a huge surprise, I don't think. But it's going to be odd to not have them there, if that makes sense. It's going to feel a little bit strange next year not seeing a DMAT car.
I think so, and obviously there's still ongoing discussions by the sounds of things, right, with regards to even the DMAC Drive Trophy, which obviously was kind of amalgamated into JWRC. Dick obviously said on the programme last week, you know, that they feel once it kind of got slipped into that, the DMAC kind of thing was lost a little bit. Do you think, as it stands, they've achieved everything they can achieve now, and they do have to kind of not start again, but or build on a WRC win as opposed to kind of focusing on perhaps R2s and things like that?
I guess realistically, where do they go next? I mean, the likes of Michelin have obviously a huge amount of budget behind them. They have years of knowledge, and so their tyres are consistent over a year. For DMAC to come in and to take a world championship win is a fantastic result. You know, they haven't been in the sport that long, but in order to get the tyres consistent and to be competitive everywhere would take a huge amount of investment. And ultimately, motorsport's got to be about a return on investment, hasn't it? So I can understand that they feel they've achieved all they're realistically going to achieve without investing a massive sum of money that they may never get back. So they've established the brand, and yeah, I guess they've got to get out there and make some money now.
Jack, you've covered it this year. I think it'd be interesting to see perhaps the angle which they go at with regards to the likes of British Championship, which was Dick, you know, was very vocal about, and you know how great it's been for them. You know, both running obviously the DMAC car for Elvin, and then obviously last year having Keith Cronin run on the tyres, obviously in the M Sport car, and obviously CA1 heavily involved. Do you think we may see a DMAC car again, maybe in BRC, or do you think they'll just retain what they've been doing with the likes of CA1?
I think they'll retain what they're doing. I think it makes sense for them. You know, Dick's talked about going back to the core of the customer base. So I guess sort of more national level championships would be good for that, especially the UK where DMAC's very well known and taken two British championships in a row now, I guess. So I think for them, it makes sense to keep doing what they're doing and working with teams like CA1. But obviously that depends on who comes back to the British Championship next year and who the drivers are, whether it makes sense for DMAC to return, I guess.
This is Absolute Rally. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Just moving on, boys. Polos are still winning by the sounds of things, Jack. Austrian title tied up in the XOGA Polo here for Raymond Baunschleicher.
Yeah, not much more to add to that really, other than that he won the Wald Viertel rally, so he's taken the championship, and yeah, it's, you know, it's nice to see one of those cars still out there winning, isn't it?
Right. He did do BRC in an F2 Golf, didn't he?
Do you know what? I was just asking myself the very same question. Yes, I'm sure he did do some rallies at least.
I'm sure he did at least two or three rallies in the Golf.
I'm thinking it was
the wide track Mark IV Golf
alongside Mark Higgins, that sort of era. Mark Higgins, Tapio Laukkanen era when they drove the blue Mark IV Golfs. Obviously, Baunschleicher was always a test driver for Volkswagen. He's had a long link with Volkswagen Motorsport, and you know, still has his own preparation company in Austria as well. So yeah, I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did. Without checking up, I can't remember what rallies he did, but I'm pretty sure he ran that wide track golf as well.
Do you want me to tell you they'll put us straight?
Go on.
Gary Boyd. Gary Boyd will put us straight. Gary, let us know. I know you will. You won't let us down. We haven't spoke about this. This was a story that kind of came out the other week. JB, you guys have run a piece on it with regards to Danny Sordo becoming effectively a part-time driver from WRC next year.
Yeah, it looks like he'll do tarmac rounds and then maybe a few others. News that Hayden Paddon fans will be enjoying quite a bit, but you know, never nice to see a driver take a step back. Also, it says a lot about Danny, I think, that he's kind of voluntarily stepped back by the looks of things if it's true what he's saying. You know, he has got a contract for next year for all the events, but has agreed that, you know, it's time for him to kind of focus on trying to win rallies again, which whether he can do next year, even on tarmac, is going to be interesting to see whether he can, especially with sort of less time in the car next year. But you know, fair play to him for taking that step back, and you know, hopefully that helps Hayden Paddon's career.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is the type of message, which is why we like our listeners. Okay, I'm just going through. I knew Gary Boyd had sent us some messages. So just with regards to Rally Australia, that's coming up. So that's why we always kind of pitch this stuff to Gary, and I'm sure people who follow him on Twitter will know him as Kiwi WRC fan. just to let you know, a podium occurred on every rally in season six times before. Most recently, it was for VW in 2016. If M Sport get the Aussie podium, we're the first team to achieve the feat three times. That's the type of knowledge our listeners have got, boys. So I think we need to raise our game.
I think I'm in a Danny Sordo situation where I might be being pulled back for less absolute rally outings for someone else to replace me, and I'll just do the specialty PRD round.
Our tarmac specialist or something. I love it. Jack, I just wanted to mention as well, and I was with the guys at Hyundai on GB, albeit in the morning of the Sunday on the customer side, but a name which I love saying, and I'll probably say it wrong, Gian Domenico Basso,
yep,
helped Hyundai to its inaugural international title last week, which was now Martin Holmes has spoke about this championship. It's basically the Tour European Rally Crown, which I don't know too much about it. Martin did mention it too, is when he's been on the program in the past. Do you know much about the championship?
Yeah, look, Bob's. They were in Ypres this year, as well as I think they started with a Transylvania rally at the start of the year. And Ryan, I know Robert Woodside did a couple of the rounds, didn't he?
That's right. Yeah.
But it's a bit of a weird one because I don't think you actually have to register. Someone might be able to write on that, but I think you just end the race and score points for the championship and the TV bridge and all that sort of stuff. So I'm not entirely sure how the sort of commercial aspect of the championship works, but they go to Transylvania, I mentioned, and I think to Ypres. They do the mirror rally that I think Lefebvre was definitely leading at one point, and I think he won. I think that's the same rally. And then they do Vlaay, which was one they did last weekend. And to be fair, Basso is the only kind of proper driver with a proper sort of entry who's done the whole championship, and to say that he should win the championships, definitely correct, and he's done it with a round to spare, so good to see him wrap that up.
Gian Domenico Basso, Ryan, just I always think Punto.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, Super 1600 JWRC, yeah, the okay. Same.
And it's apparently the guy who is behind the Punto is the man that's heading up the R5 Hyundai program, so that kind of makes perfect sense. I only found that out over the Rally GB weekend, who was running the R5 program for Hyundai, and it's the guy who was running the Super 1600 Punto and then moved into the Super 2 car as well. There you go. Just thought I'd share that.
Thanks.
No, it's no problem. Yeah, it might come in handy in a pub quiz.
Just so you know, going back slightly, Raymond Baumschlager did indeed do the 1999 British Rally Championship.
Thank you. You've been on EWRC.com, haven't you?
Well, of course, it's the sensible place to look.
Of course it is. Yeah. Of course it is. Jack, moving on, a piece that you wrote in this week's MN, and it was a little bit of a shock when I seen this news break with regards to Galway being pulled for next year.
Yeah, sad news. It's been the opening round of the Irish Tarmac Championship for many years, and the Galway Motor Club have won that event for only lost about three events, I think, since 1971. So very disappointing to see that go, but a bit of a reflection of where Irish rallying's at the minute, unfortunately. It's make increasingly difficult each year to get insurance for events, and that's being, the fact that that's happening is being passed down to the competitor eventually, because the event's got to be insured in some way and the cost has got to be covered. So unfortunately that comes in the shape of a levy for competitors to pay more money to enter rallies. So clubs are getting more and more worried about making running the events, because they're scared they're not going to get the entries because the entry fee is getting so high. So it's a massive problem in Ireland at the minute. And I know for a fact, speaking to some of the other events that are running later in the year, that they're very nervous about their entries as well. So it's a massive sort of upfront cost that you've got to have to run a rally in Ireland at the minute. And, it's a great shame that such a country that is associated with rallying very, very, very much is struggling so hard to kind of run, really.
Right, I guess there's we take for granted over here on the mainland with regards to events running. We do have events pulled, of course. We have events pulled. They don't happen on a regular basis, and normally it's down to entries, not down to insurance. But this is going to creep across if we're not careful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, whilst we see events not running just mainly because of entries, I think, you know, all event organisers are under pressure, be it in the UK or Ireland. I mean, particularly forest events in this country now, Forestry Commission charges. A lot of events in this country simply can't run if they don't find a sponsor to almost subsidise the rallies now, because they know on a lot of occasions that they won't get enough entries to simply make the maths stack up. If we start suffering from the insurance problems that that Ireland's obviously got, and obviously we've got this ongoing investigation into the Jim Clark rally, the accident that happened there, and if that has a knock-on effect with our insurance, then yeah, you're absolutely right, we could have problems here as well. So it is a concern at the minute.
Definitely something to keep our eye on. Jack Bengen, just having a look now, the Billy Coleman Award, the Final Seven, which has been such a great award for many drivers over the years. And obviously, we've got Callum Devine there, who we've kind of got to know. But do you know much about the other guys that are in the running for it?
Yeah, I do. Well, we can actually narrow it down right now, because the interviews happen on Tuesday of the week that you're going to listen to this episode. So by Wednesday, the final three was released. So we know the final three are Callum Devine, who we've talked about quite a bit over the year, haven't we? But if you've not heard of Callum Devine, he's the 2017 Prestone Motorsport News Junior British Rally Champion. See that? Brilliant. We've also got Kevin Eaves, who was the Irish Tarmac Modified Rally Champion this year in a beautiful-looking blue Toyota Corolla. And Johnny Traynor, who is a very well-known guy over in Ireland for driving Honda Civics very, very quickly and getting big, giant killing results. I think for second in both the kind of major junior championships in Ireland, the Irish Tarmac and the Border Rally Championship as well. So three guys who are fairly... You know, we've had really good years, in fairness, but you know, I think looking at that, Callum Devine is a return entry from last year. He got into the final last year as well, and given what he's won this year, I think he's got to be favourite at the minute.
Fantastic. Well, obviously, when we find out the winner, we'll try and get the winner on. Just wanted to before we start wrapping up and start thinking about any other business, I seen this on Twitter coming out and various things, and you guys have put a picture in this week with regards to Spencer Sports, who had a bit of a test day, and Guy Atherton, who did BRC with us in the last couple of years, and Tom Williams was there having a run in the car. Do you know what the idea was behind that, Jack?
There's a couple of little bits to that, really. They had a lot of Spencer Sport had a lot of sort of hospitality things going on that day, so they wanted to give some of their customers a bit of a drive in the car and stuff like that, which Ocean Price did. And then the other was to try and drum up a bit of interest in selling the car. So they invited a lot of drivers down, including G, Tom, Rob Swan, who does a lot in Barbados, people like this, really, to come and drive the car and see what they thought of the Mirage.
Fantastic. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one anyway. Boys, we're heading headlong into any other business, and as we haven't all been together, I'll tell you what, you know, before we do any other business, I just want to go back. Obviously, we've just talked about the Billy Coleman Award, and there's another award, obviously, we have here over on the mainland in the UK, which is the John Eason Award, which is had people like Chris Ingram win it, and you know, guys like Sam Billingham won it, I think, the other year, who won the SC Championship this year. Jack, can you just take us through the runners and riders in that one as well?
Yeah, of course I can. John Eason Award. Right, we've got George Lepley, who hasn't done a lot last year because he's just started university, so he's kind of scaled back his rallying career a little bit, but he'll be well known from the Junior 1000 Championship in Britain. We've also got Tommy Meadows, another former junior who has been driving a Ford KA quite quickly in the BTRA this year. He's had a few mechanical issues and one little role that we won't talk about too much. And then we've got Chris Sharp-Sinkis, who I believe is the first co-driver to ever make the final three. And he's been doing various stuff this year, mainly with Ed Fossey from Jersey, who won one of the BTRDA 1400 championships this year. So very interesting to see a co-driver into the final three, and it should be interesting. I'm actually due to be on the judging panel for this, so quite looking forward to seeing the three of them and see how they get on.
Right, so we go to any other business, and obviously we've just gone through runners and riders for the John Eason Award, but I'm going to come to you first, Jack Bengen. I'm hoping it's going to be an epic one, because we didn't get one from you last week. You're any other business for this week, young man?
No pressure.
No, not at all.
It's not going to be epic, but it's definitely worth doing, I think. congratulations to friend of the show, Callum Black, who wrapped up the Welsh Rally Championship last weekend on the Y-Deem Rally, one very well known in the UK and one that competitors seem to like a lot. It was very slippy, I gather. But Callum, although he claims that he wasn't trying very hard, managed to win the event and also take the championship. So well done to him. And also a little number plate one that Ryan Champion might like. It's only very short because I've not had a chance to do a whole lot of research on this one yet. But there's a car which is... The number plate is S17TG. Does anyone know anything about this car?
S17TG? Yeah, it's a Teg car, and it was the one that Mark Higgins had that plate on his car at one point.
Correct. So yeah. Aaron Newby has been driving this car, and it's one that he works on quite closely. Anyone who doesn't know Aaron Newby, he is the son of Stuart Newby, who is the Teg Sport dude. And Teg Sport won many a BRC round and BRC titles. Elvin, Keith Cronin have both driven Teg cars before. And that car this year with Aaron has won, it's won 8 out of 9 rallies that it's done. And now Aaron is 23 years of age and has somewhere around 30 rally wins, which I think is quite incredible for that age.
There you go. I just need to get clarification, Ryan Champion. I'm going to ask you, do you know what a Teg Sport dude would be?
A Teg Sport dude? Is that like a man who works for Teg Sport?
He's the boss, the chief, the supremo.
We know the grand. Yeah, we know who Stuart is, but I'm just going with your description of what Stuart's title was. That's all. Teg Sport dude. I feel like we should have caps on sideways.
He's going to enjoy that one. He's going to like that when he listens back.
Okay. All right, fine. All right, fine. Ryan Champion, you're any other business? Well, no. Do you know what? Your any other business should be about what you're about to embark on, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that might be next week. So I'm going to Africa to do the safari once again, but we don't start that until a week today. So hopefully we'll have a little preview before that. So
yeah, we'll do something next week, early next week.
My couple of bits of any other business this week. Firstly, relate back to the Roger Albert Clark rally that we touched on a little bit earlier on. I mentioned to Ben Friend and my old co-driver Cliffy Simmons, they were doing a brilliant job. They were knocking on the door of the top five in a Pinto engined Escort, set a couple of third fastest times overall against the BDAs in the darkness, and then slid off on the ice and lost the result. But managed to get going again, and then the rear diff exploded on the start line of the very last stage, stage number 30. So bad luck to them, because that was an epic performance. Also, the other great performance over the rally, slightly unusual one, this husband and wife team, so Andy Gray and Kim Gray, but they were competing against each other. So Kim was out in a Mark II Escort. Andy used to be one of the mechanics at the ADR team, at the Mitsubishi team when I was there, and they both competed together. Kim actually snapped a camshaft at the end of day one. They both stayed up all night, stripping the engine out of the Escort, rebuilding it. They both started day two with no sleep whatsoever, and they got both cars to the end of the rally. So top job, and that's what that's. You see, he doesn't understand, doesn't young Jack Benyon, that this is what it's all about, Tony. You know, it's these stories that you get on these long distance rallies.
Absolutely, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Ryan Champion,
I agree as well, but my comments were just relating to this RAC rally this year, and there wasn't a lot of competition. That's all I was trying to get across.
Do you know what? Right. Do you know what? I'm sorry, Jack Benyon. My any other business was I'm now going to pick you up on this.
All right, go on then.
Okay, Marty won the rally from Matthew Robinson by 1:44.
Yep.
Okay. Now. Okay, if buts, whens, and whys, and if and buts were pots and pans, we'd all be scrap metal merchants, right? I can't claim that one. It was Guy Martin who said that in a press conference. But, you know, once you start going back all the way down to the top five, top five, there's 7 minutes splitting the top five cars. So I don't think that's actually – I think if you looked at some WRC rounds going back a few years, that wouldn't have been so different, to be perfectly honest with you.
No, that's fair enough. I don't disagree with that, but I think – there was lots of places in the top 10 or wherever you look in the order where people are closer because someone ahead of them has dropped out. So the competition is what I'm talking about.
Isn't that rallying?
Yeah, I think I'm trying not to be too nitpicky, in the sense that I appreciate the event, and I think it's a fantastic event. It's great that they go all over the country and that they do so many miles. I just think this event didn't quite grab me because of the there didn't seem to be that many battles or competition across the 3 days, not just on the final day or in the final classification. There didn't seem to be, like, Pritchard led and was clearly kind of the class of the field when he was in the lead. And the thing I would pick out of it is that I like what Ryan was doing there is there was some fantastic things that happen in rallies like this that can only happen in rallies like this, where people rebuild their engines and stay up all night to get to the end event and things like that. They're the kind of stories that are enjoyable and maybe should be brought out a little bit more.
I've just got a couple of facts for you, Tony and Jack. 1981 Lombard RAC Rally, won by Hanno Mikkola. He won by 11 minutes and 5 seconds from Ari Vatanen. 2 years later, Hanno Mikkola was beaten by his teammate Stig Blomqvist. Interestingly, my teammate next week. Just drop that in. And Stig beat Hanno by 10 minutes in the Quattros. So there we are.
There you go, Jack. There you go. Back in your box. I think that's clear.
No, because I probably would have argued well, obviously I don't know exactly what happened in those events, but if those events were like that, then I probably wouldn't have enjoyed them as much as some other events, because I am someone who likes competition in motorsport, and I think that in some events there is not much competition. I'm not saying the RAC this year was a bad event. I'm just saying it didn't grasp me as much as maybe some other events.
Jack. Spade, put it down,
Jack, down.
I don't feel like I'm digging a hole. Down. That's fine.
No, I think you're trying to fill it in, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure that's what's happening.
Jack, you'll be back with the same time, same place next week, won't you?
No, I don't think so. I think I won't bother now.
There's no time at rallies. There's no time at rallies next week, so he's out.
Jill Panizzi's Ryan's got some tarmac testing to do next week. I'll probably turn up.
We'll be with Ryan before he jets off. Folks, we will all be back, but we'll be back after this break, and we're going to be back with Nicky Grist.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified advert and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, and welcome back to... We had a little bit of a look around. We know Ryan's done a bit of drive, and he's done a few rallies here and there, but we wanted to find somebody that had kind of done Rally Australia. And then we found Nicky Grist. So we thought he would be a good person to have on. So welcome back it's been a while, Nicky, since you've had you, but welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you. As I say, Ryan Champion said we should get Nicky because of Rally Australia. So I'm going to hand you over to Ryan Champion, because he's going to grill you about Rally Australia, I think.
Well, the only thing I will put my hand up and say before we start, yes, I do. I have done Rally Australia a few times, but unfortunately, it was on the other side of the coast. But, you know, it was on the west coast. Now we're on the east coast. But, you know, there are a lot of similarities, so we've got plenty to talk about.
Well, you haven't just done Rally Australia a few times. You've actually won Rally Australia a couple of times. So,
yes,
I think you won it on your first attempt, didn't you?
Well, you're testing my memory now. I'm getting old, but... Yeah, I think it possibly is not far off, actually. Yeah, because I won it with Juha in 92, 93. But yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, thank you for reminding me that.
It's not everybody who wins a world championship rally at the first attempt, but I think you did it a couple of times with Juha, maybe. But yeah, like you said, it was on the opposite course then. But I mean, Rally Australia at the time was sort of a real leader of the way in terms of world championship rallies, wasn't it? You know, it really led the way in terms of PR.
Yeah, I think it was down to the organising committee, really. I mean, driven by a chap called Gary Connolly, who was a part of the Australian Federation that went quite a long way into the FIA as well. But he was very open-minded, you know, came up with a lot of innovative ideas and implemented them well, which... Actually, for an event that probably had the worst roads in the championship, was the one event where most people really enjoyed the most because of the lie of the land, the place, the weather. You know, it was an enjoyable rally to do, albeit, as I said, on terrible roads.
So what was terrible about them? I mean, it was quite a loose surface, wasn't it? And the stages were quite unforgiving with trees literally by the roadside, no ditches in between.
Yeah, I don't think we could say that all the roads were rubbish, because there were some really nice forest stages as well. When you went south of Perth, Wellington Dam was a classic example where we had a 40-odd kilometre stage, you know, and those roads were really nice around a lot of lakes and, you know, it was quite pretty. But when you went up around Perth itself and, you know, some of the sections in Bunnings weren't bad, but, you know, some stuff to the, which direction would it be, to the east of Perth, when you went inland, they weren't so nice because you were effectively driving on roads which were just made around trees. It wasn't a road that was built and cleared. They basically were tracks made in trees, and you had this surface which had a very hard base, but you had this very odd round ball bearing type gravel, and you knew you could have a tree on the exit of the road, on the edge of the road. You know, there was no ditch or runoff area. It was right there. So, you know, if you were highly committed, you took a lot of risk as well.
Now, obviously, you had a lot of experience of the World Championship by the time you sort of came to sit with him. And he was always a very laid-back character sort of outside of the car. What was he like inside the car, turning up to a rally like that?
Very similar. You know, he was without doubt the easiest person I ever sat with. You know, and he'd look over, he said, "What are you doing there now?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just doing my co-driving set." "Well, why are you doing it?" I said, "Well, that's the way I co-drive." He said, "You don't have to do that," he said. "Just relax and enjoy yourself." "We've got to have some fun while we're here." And I said, "Well, that's the way I do it. I just want to carry on doing it that way." But, you know, he was very laid back, and, you know, he was very similar to Colin in many ways in his driving style, because it was a very natural talent. And he made everything look so easy in the car, and it just felt like slow motion because they had that much control, where if you sat with a Didier Auriol or a Sainz, you'd still be arguably going as quick, but it would look like it was hard work driving that fast, because they had to work hard to do it. But, you know, Colin and Juha just made it look so easy.
Now, I think while he sat with Juha, he did teach you a few words in Finnish, particularly when he wanted to push on a bit harder.
Well, right, you're leading me off somewhere here. Where do you want me to go with it?
Well, you learnt a few words of Finnish. Ones we can actually share on the show.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of things. There was, you know, I remember when I first joined him in Finland, we went to do a local rally. He said, "Right, if you want to get the marshal's attention, this is what you say," which is not complimentary. But, you know, but then there was other things that, you know, "Nyt mennä," like "now it starts," or "kyllä lähtee," and, you know, all these sort of things. It's "let's go," and, you know, "now it starts," and all this sort of stuff. But we also had a few, you know, Finnish words in the pace notes as well, because for him, you know, he wanted to use those Finnish words that explained a specific situation much better for him in Finnish than it would in English. But strangely enough, you know, 90% of the pace notes were all in English, because it was far less complicated and much easier for him to use. So it was a very nice balance of, you know, Finnish and English, which suited me perfectly.
Now, moving forwards a couple of years then, and you started sitting alongside Colin in the Subaru, and the footage of you and Colin over Bunnings jumps is probably some of the most iconic WRC footage ever. Did you have any warning that was coming? Did you know he was going to push that hard down there?
Yeah, you always know Colin's going to push hard on stuff like that, especially when there was a few thousand spectators, you know, the water splash a few hundred metres on, and they could see it all happening. You know, if there was a an arena, natural arena in rallying that was made for Colin McRae. Probably Bunnings Jumps was it. And, you know, the organisers put a fairly charismatic Australian rally driver called Ross Dunkerton, who was such a character, you know, and they put him on there as, you know, as the commentary for all these guys. And, you know, we went over there and he said, well, he said it would be very difficult to score that one. But he said, I can tell you one thing, it's definitely 11 out of 10. But that was his level of commitment. I mean, the first one was a big jump, which actually landed really nicely. It was the second jump after it that was a tricky one, because it kind of jumped and landed sideways, but on the back right rear, and it causes you a little bit of head whiplash. And you know, I whacked my head on something. And, you know, I'd finished the stage and my head was buzzing a little bit from just whacking my head on the side of a car. I don't know whether it was a pillar or a window or whatever it was. But, you know, the jump, it's a big jump, was actually very easy.
Now, that was obviously a great year for you. You won the rally, but yourself and Colin had one of the most heartbreaking moments of the WRC in Australia as well, and that was the podium that was so nearly yours in the Skoda.
Yes, yeah. Well, we had a couple. Actually, it's been the site of probably three disasters, if I could add another couple to the list. I think the first one was probably 98, where we were battling really hard for the championship and the turbo blew in Bunnings. That was one, and we had to retire. That cost us dearly. That lost us a championship. The next one would have been 99 in the Ford Focus in a lovely stage. What was it called? Oh, I forget the name of the forest. And, you know, quite a nice forest. And we went off at real high speed where I thought I was going to die. And Colin thought it was my time to go as well, but got away with it. And that car was a write-off. And then, of course, then, like you say, in Australia 2005, Skoda were on the verge of, without doubt, their best ever result. And it just all fell to pieces in the very last service, which, you know, I felt so sorry for the team. You know, okay, we kind of were coming to the end of our career. So, you know, we'd had lots of moments to enjoy. But for the team, this was a big thing. And, you know, in many ways, I thought it was rather strange when they had key mechanics looking after Armin Schwarz's car. And we had a few capable lads, and one of the lads is now one of the head mechanics for Skoda Motorsport themselves in their WRC2 program. But, you know, at that time, they were put in a very pressurized situation due to some data that the night before was fine, and then the next morning, all of a sudden, it wasn't fine at all. And they were pressurized into this clutch change in a very short space of time. And these guys weren't experienced enough, cool-headed enough, and unfortunately, the clutch change went horribly wrong. And, you know, I sat at the out control waiting. We went OTL at the out control, and I walked back just in time for the car to be dropped off the jack and put onto the ground. Having put a second clutch into the car, they started it, reversed it, and at which time, in the roadway where the cars went, it was full of Peugeot mechanics, Mitsubishi mechanics, Subaru mechanics, and Ford, and everybody was there. All the teams congregated, you know, and all these mechanics from other teams cheered and clapped these mechanics, but these mechanics were completely destroyed. I've never seen so many grown men cry as that particular service point. And they rushed out to the back and they were throwing things around in the porta cabin at the back, and they were so bitterly, bitterly disappointed. And that, unfortunately, was their swan song of WRC rallying, because the factory team after that never appeared, other than us going to Rally GB. They'd never got another championship after that.
Yeah, quite a sad end, like you say, for Skoda's WRC involvement, but obviously lots of success more recently with the WRC2 cars particularly. But as we've already talked about, the rally moved from the West Coast to the East Coast. Have you been to the new event? Have you been to Coffs Harbour?
No, I haven't. I have been over to that part of the world, and of course it's right in the area of I'm a Celebrity Getting Out. It all yes. starts this weekend. Now that is my favourite flipping programme. I just love it, especially the eating challenges. They're brilliant. I've eaten a widgety grub, by the way.
Is that right?
Do you fancy a widgety grub?
No, I don't at all. No.
There was a restaurant in Perth. Sorry to change the subject now and could throw you completely off track. But there was a restaurant in Perth where you could go and eat bush tucker food. And on the menu was widgety grubs. But they did cook them. But when you bite into them, they've got this, I don't know, mushy stuff. It's like a mousse inside them. God knows what it is. But it didn't taste too bad. I got a certificate somewhere for eating widgety grubs. They've never asked me to be a part of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out Here.
That's a shame, really.
I'd be right in there with EVT. I'd have a go at anything, you know.
Well, you know, maybe stuff.
Maybe we should do a rally maybe a rally one. How good would that be?
Well, do you know what? Maybe that's why there's been no announcement over Seb Ogier's future, because maybe
he's staying in Australia.
He's going to finish the rally and he's going to go straight into I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah. Well, anyway, is this a rally program?
It was at one point. Yeah.
Well, there's the segue. So, Mr. Ogier took a fantastic world championship win for M Sport. Great to see, obviously, a British team winning a world championship manufacturer's title again. Do you think we'll see him back in WRC next year?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at it, he's got three options. But I think really a lot of the decisions here are based around what Ford can offer. You know, if you're a world champion and a five-time world champion on a trot, you're not necessarily going to say, Mark, listen, we've won one world championship. I tell you what, you just pay me a few quid and I'll come and do it for you. When you're a world champion, it doesn't work like that. You expect to be paid for the amount of championships you won. He brought a championship to them. He brought a manufacturer's title to them. And Malcolm said in an interview I did with him, he said, Nick, you won't believe how much he's brought the team on. The team have elevated themselves to a high level. So that deserves to have a payment, have a wage attached to it. And basically, because he's now not going to get his Volkswagen money, Malcolm's got to pay the full wage packet, which is going to put a serious drain on resources. And, you know, not just that. Yes, they've built a car from the word go with the talented engineers they've got. They had a car which from the outset was quick. It's been reliable. And, you know, that's what put them in such a strong position at the end of the year, is because they were way ahead at the start, and they just gained so much momentum. But to keep at that level, you've got to invest so much more money to test and development projects. And I'm sure there comes to a point in Malcolm's budget where, you know, you have to say, I can't spend another 10 million. I haven't got to develop a car, because, you know, where do you draw the line? It's got to have a certain element of manufacturers' help to keep this thing going.
Well, hopefully
and
we'll
I think...
Go on.
Oh, sorry. And I just think that, you know, from Ogier's point of view, right, come to the table, guys. If you're willing to commit to this, I'll probably stay. After that, what options has he got? Yeah, Citroën. I'm sure they'd step to the table and pay him the money he wants. But then, is the car good enough for him? You know, on gravel, it doesn't seem to be anywhere near as good as it is on tarmac. So there's a question mark there. But the other thing which nobody's probably thinking about is, you know, Mrs. Ogier said, well, you can always stay at home, darling, and spend the time with me. you know, and he's got children now. Maybe he can have another child and just retire very nicely. So if nothing appeals to him, he may just retire while he's on top.
Well, hopefully we'll get an outcome to this pretty soon. But Sebastian's won the World Championship. He's got no pressure on him for Australia this weekend. Tanak obviously moving teams, certainly no pressure there. Chris Meek gone well on dry gravel before. I'm sure Thierry Neuville's out to prove a point after losing this year's championship. Where do you look for Rally Australia 2017?
I think the weather's going to play its part because it looks like they're going to have some pretty big storms. And when you look at the roads as they are in the dry, that's one thing. But once you get a little bit of rain on these stages, the conditions can change dramatically because, you know, they get very little rain as it is. And when it's going to fall in some volume, you know, it could turn certain sections of the route into a bit of a quagmire. So there's going to be an element of doubt if this heavy rain does come down. But I would have thought that everybody's going to be going for it. They've got nothing to lose and everything to gain for them all. I think Thierry Neuville is certainly the hungriest of the lot at the moment. You know, there's no doubting the speed. I mean, he's got a hell of a lot of it. I think the Hyundai is certainly fast. But it's been arguably the weakest of the bunch with little technical issues that the car has failed on Thierry. I mean, I know he's made a couple of mistakes and damaged the car himself and put him out of certain events. But, you know, I think, you know, Thierry, you just couldn't discount him because he was impressive on GB, didn't you think?
I thought he was mega on GB, especially after psychologically... Obviously, he had the penalty even before the event started, obviously, with the kind of the non-start on that, on the super special or whatever you want to call it, up in Towin there. And then obviously very early on, he went off on the first proper stage, if you like. But yeah, the times were so strong, weren't they?
They were. And I think there's a little sign of weakness. That's something he maybe needs to overcome himself, in as much as don't let your feelings get in the way of what you're trying to achieve. I think, you know, that was a sheer sign of 10 seconds. Hell, shit, it's nothing. Get on with the job. Yeah. Don't even think about it. But it was almost like that 10 seconds was everything, and he was going to lose the rally because of it. And he pushed hard, put it in the ditch. And when you think about it, the speed of him going in that ditch, that could have broken the car there and then.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say the polar opposite for Thierry, and I wanted to come to this, of course, was Elvin. I think that's possibly the coolest and the steeliest I think I've ever seen Elvin.
Yeah. I think, you know, what you can honestly say is that he learned a hell of a lot from Argentina, you know, and he was... you know, making sure that he wasn't going to make that mistake twice. But what an impressive way to win the first rally, to lead it from the front, control it. Yes, there was an argument that he had a bit of an advantage with the tyre in certain conditions. But the second day, the weather played into his hands, because if it hadn't have rained on that second day, he would have been in deep trouble, but it paid off and it worked for him. And he had to drive accordingly to get that car through those 10 kilometres of the first part of Saturday. And what summarised the victory to me is on Saturday night, the very first stage in that fog, he thought, let me just get this car through the stage. He went into that stage, he didn't try to push, he drove sensibly, he came out, he lost a few seconds, but then he went straight in the next dark stage with no fog, bang, another fastest time, let's get some of that time back. And that showed to me that the boy was ready to win. And, you know, of course, the soft tyre worked for him on the last day. There wasn't enough mileage that was going to cause his tyres any grief. and you just controlled it and you just let them take a couple of seconds here, a couple of seconds there. But it was a beautifully driven rally. And, I mean, for me, winning any hurdle for a World Championship driver is not just winning your first World Championship rally, but also winning your first home rally. And I think he's done it in one go. So he's got both of those, the two biggest hurdles a driver would ever face, out of the way in one go. And I think that from here on, he's going to be driving with a lot more confidence. And I'm almost sure, although we don't know, that he's secured his taken forward, isn't he? How can you not take him?
Well, that's, you know, there's an assumption. I think we all assume that, obviously, with Oit moving on, that, you know, at the moment, oddly enough, he's, in all our minds, he's probably the only M Sport driver that we kind of think will, you know, 100% be there next year. So to even think of M Sport having three completely different drivers next year is just mind blowing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. I think we're probably going to be getting, a new driver in the car for the third car.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you know, we'll probably have somebody like Simonon or somebody like that driving probably the third car. But you've got Elvin. But you know, I don't know, what on earth would you do? You know, if you didn't have Sebastian Ogier, you know, that's the tough one.
Yeah, it's
who's he going to get instead? It's a tough call.
There's no, and this is where we've kind of got this hole in experience, haven't we? It's, you know, I feel a little bit for someone like Juhannan. He's been a really, really good, you know, IRC driver. Came in, obviously did stuff with Hyundai, been a test driver for Toyota. But, you know, very much now heading towards the end of his career. And even you look at Danny Sordo, of course, taking his step back and things like that. But I think when we had that barren period, Nicky, where we only had kind of Citroën and Ford and the rest of it was privateers, I think we've kind of still suffering a little bit because there isn't those drivers to take that step up.
I think what the problem you're facing in these cars cost a fortune to run. I was chatting with Mads Olsberg, and, you know, lovely lad, a lot of experience, but he's doing it now as a privateer. And he said, Nick, he said, I've got a reasonable budget that a few years ago would have been, he would have probably given himself a drive in the World Championship. Now he said, I'm struggling to do seven rallies with the budget. And he said that, you know, when you bear that in mind, how can a talented youngster who really does have the speed be taken on face value and jump into a work scene? Nobody's going to do it. But you've got to spend this money to show ability you've got, to give yourself the opportunities with the teams in the future. And I think that's the big problem with the sport. There's not enough small-time opportunities to give the drivers the big-time chances. That's the problem we've got in the sport at the moment, I think.
Do you think the jump now from the R5 cars up to the new 2017 World cars is too big?
There is an argument for that, yes. I mean, Elvin's been lucky because he's been doing a lot of test and development work, so he was one of the fortunate ones. But, you know, I think that, you know, Hannanen, you know, he proved himself how good he was in an R5 car. But the transition to the World car hasn't worked for him, has it?
No.
So, you know, he didn't perform well. And you know, I feel sorry for, he's one of the nicest chaps you could meet. But, you know, it didn't work for him. And unfortunately, he's got nothing more to show for it for 2018. But, I mean, saying that, you know, you do get those opportunities. And I think if you're good enough, you can go forward, you know, because from a team's perspective, they've got nowhere else to draw from, have they?
No.
Not really. That is the next level down. But we do have a bit of an evolution of the R5 coming for the next year to try and, you know, I'm not sure 100% exactly what it is, but they will have a little bit more performance, I think, to try and fill that gap. But, you know, I think these new cars are just so incredibly fast. it's going to be a major revamp of an R5 car to get halfway there. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose that, you know, the step up, they were going to try and use the 2016 cars, and it just didn't work, did it? You know, I don't think anybody ran a 2016 car. I think possibly Mads tie up with, his name's gone out of my head, Martin Prokhorov. I think they tried to do something, didn't they, at the beginning of the year and run a 2016 world car as well. And it just didn't quite happen. Nobody's kind of took it up because, again, the running costs of a 2016 car are still obviously nowhere near a 2017 car, but they're still astronomical. And there was only one out there. So what was it, you know, to gain from running it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the future of the 17 cars is a little bit of a vague one as well, because, you know, unless you're fortunate enough to be a part of a factory team with a super duper rally license, I think, you know, we've got like a super license scenario going on with these 2017 cars. You know, not anybody can just jump into them. You've got to be an exceptional, talented driver to be given the opportunity to drive them. So there again, you can only best come from an R5 car to jump up into them if you get the opportunity. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, for a team, they've got to invest in young talent, give them opportunities without loading them with the pressure, just to see how they go.
One man I wanted to ask you about before we finish is a man you probably know him from his younger years, who's had a very up and down year. His course is Chris Meek at Citroen. You know, do you feel that pressure you've just been talking about was perhaps what affected Chris this year?
I think Chris, there's so much of Chris I can see as a Colin McRae. You know, he's, you know, obviously every time he wins, he, you know, he always puts it back for Colin, and I give this victory to Colin. And, you know, I think that while he's won a lot of rallies, he's also lost a lot of rallies as well.
Yeah.
Through the odd mistake here and there. And I think those kind of mistakes in these top teams, you can't do anymore. You know, if you're going faster than you can possibly drive and with keeping the car on the road, then you shouldn't go there. You should just drive at a pace and make sure you get through, because it's all about the collection of points as much as being good and fast. You know, being the fastest to the point of flying off the road in one corner, that doesn't win you championships. And I think, you know, it's a difficult one. And Colin was very, very similar to Chris in many ways. Sometimes you just have to accept second place is good.
Yeah.
And I think it's a tough thing when you're so driven and you've got all this pent up, you know, ability and speed, and you just want to let it go. But it comes a point where, like a Kankinen, no, he's going better than me today. I let him win this rally. I'll take second place. And that's why you are a four-time world champion, you know? You just collect the points. And Ogier, when you think about it, has done exactly the same thing this year. He hasn't necessarily been the most electrifying, has he? He hasn't won that many rallies, but he's always been there or thereabouts.
Yeah. If we can just dip into 2018 and we take it as read that Seb is going to stay with M Sport/Ford, where would you put your money? Bearing in mind now that you've just talked about Thierry being hungry, we've just talked about Elvin being hungry. You know, there's a lot of young drivers that are snapping at his heels now. Would you still put the house on Seb securing another title?
Yeah, you could not put him. You couldn't put a lot of money on Seb, even if you wanted to put your money on somebody else to win a championship. He's going to be there or thereabouts. There is no doubt. You know, he's that driven, he's that experienced, and, you know, winning championships is easy for him. You know, and I think he's going to be there and thereabouts. When it comes to Thierry Neuville, there's no doubt he's got the speed, but I think some things need to change. You need to get some more reliability in the car. I think the team need to step to the plate. And I think Thierry needs to have a little bit more of a balanced approach as well, because he's made mistakes too. Other than that, Toyota. Now, I had the opportunity to have a good look around that Toyota, and I can tell you that that thing is packed with technology. You know, you open up the bonnet, and it looks like a three-cylinder engine in there. You know, it's like nothing. It's like a little cardboard box under the bonnet. The engines are small. The suspension is massive on the car. The technology built around it, the aerodynamics, everything looks good. And it's only their first year. And I've got a feeling that, you know, that car's going to come on really quickly when it does come on. And, you know, to win a couple of rallies in that first year for a brand new team, a brand new car, I think we could see more of the Toyota this year, next year than we have in 2017. But I don't think it's ready just yet to win a world championship, I don't think.
Here's one last question for you before I take up any more of your time, and I'll let you go, Nicky. But just talking about Toyota and talking about that, obviously Oit is going to be going there. Yari Matti's still there. It'll be year two for Yari Matti. Who would you put your money on being the number one Toyota driver come the end of 2018?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. That is a difficult question. I mean, Yari Matti's going to start pretty strong. Ott won't be slow, but I think he's going to take a little time before he feels his way. By the end of the season, I think it's going to be a close one thing between the pair of them. But I think, you know, having those two drivers there, they've got two opportunities to win a rally now instead of one opportunity to win a rally with just Matt, with Yari Matti. So that's why I think that Toyota is going to be coming stronger and stronger the more into the season we go. And I think they will win a lot more rallies in 2018. And that they could be a four, but a force to be reckoned with. But 2019, for my money, is on there. But I think they'll probably be on equal standings at the end of the season, I have a feeling.
Happy days. Nicky, listen, thank you so much. We're only going to grab you for 10 minutes. And as ever, we got into grubs, we got into bush sucker trials, and we got into potential champions of 2019. So I don't think we can do any more than that. So thanks so much for joining us.
No, my pleasure.
Happy day. Good to chat. Thank you so much. Folks, yeah, you know, man, where we live. It's facebook.com/absoluterally. And of course, on Twitter, absolute_rally. Appreciate the download. Same time, same place, in your little podcast hold next week.